This is Overdrive. I'm Dave Naylor, sitting in for the vacationing Brian Hayes, joined in studio by my co-host, NHL analyst Dave Poulin. Scott Mitchell, TSN 1050 Blue Jays reporter, is here. And we are joined in studio by Henry Burris from the CFL on TSN. You actually covered Henry at the end of his time in Calgary. Right,
I did. I did.
I know. It's like deja vu, brother. It's like a reunion right today.
I still remember the January. He was traded to Hamilton for Kevin
Blunt. Man. That was Blue Monday for us.
Yeah, I remember you feeling some type of way about
that. My goodness. But you know what? I always tell people that sometimes in areas where you feel you might fail can be the one opportunity that you use for the next step or the next chapter in your life. And I preach that when I go around to kids and I tell them, they're like, oh, you won the Grey Cup and walked off. I'm like, but there were some bumpy paths and some obstacles along the way. But for me, I use those as stepping stones. And me, I was always a guy who played with a chip on my shoulder. And for me, I use those opportunities and those situations as extra logs on the fire.
I want to bring the audience into the conversation we were having off air during the break there. You are a highly successful retired professional football player and now a great broadcaster, but you are also a hockey dad.
I sold my soul.
You sold your soul for that. Tell us a little bit about your sons and their hockey.
Well, actually, just my oldest, Armand. Okay. He's playing. He's 13 years old, and he's going into contact right now. Yeah. But he loves the game. He loves the game because he was actually starting to lose just some interest in the game when it was just, you know, learn how to pass the puck. That was all fun and dandy, but you know, he had this extra gear because he was always getting put in the penalty box because he was aggressive to the puck. And whenever they'd say go into the corner and dig the puck out, he was the kid coming in there, not really dipping his shoulder, but he was the physical type. And somebody would fall over and he'd get tossed in the box for two or sometimes 4 minutes, depending on how severe they thought it was. But now the fact that, you know, he's trying out for AA this year because he still has basketball aspirations and we always preach the fact of him to play more than one sport because of the development and just the experience, because you only have one life to live, so experience as much as you can. But in Canada, the parents are crazy, okay? And just to have, you know, some of the experiences,
you know,
and
what?
Some of
don't
the politics.
Don't limit it to Canada. They're crazy everywhere.
Oh, you're right.
I dealt with them nationwide, corner to corner. They're crazy everywhere.
You're right.
Everyone thinks they have the worst parents. Illinois will say, Chicago, they got the worst hockey parents. Detroit, they got the worst hockey parents. Ottawa?
The worst.
What's crazier, though? Oklahoma football parents or Canadian hockey parents?
You know what? There's a big difference because, to me, down south, the people who lead the teams, they're all paid. They're all paid to do a job. The coaches, the administrators, they're all paid. Where up here, it's parents volunteering. So you get politics down there, but they're different than the politics up here where, you know, if we had our little clique here, we're like, okay, your son, they're all the team guys. You already know that. Let's go enjoy some cold ones. That's how teams are made up here in many cases. Mm-hmm. But down south, to more so where I grew up, this is how I knew it. Yeah, you have your crazy parents that'll go up to coaches and they're ready to fight, but at the end of the day, there are paid professionals who decide who's on the team. Mm-hmm. There's some politics, because I'm pretty sure there's some dollars under the table that persuade it, but it's different types of politics and everything. But again, you have your parents that are crazy in the stands, but in hockey up here, the crazy fans in the stands somehow make their way on the ice too. So that's the biggest difference that I've experienced up here.
They're the ones coaching the team.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes, not to be disrespectful. Coach,
you're not a crazy hockey parent though.
No, I'm pretty much the administrator in the stands. I'm like the guy who's monitoring all the parents' activity. I've almost had a couple of fights with some parents because I've had to keep them in line. I've had parents beaking other parents. I've had to step in for mothers who, fathers from a rival team were about to beat up a mother. And I've stepped in and said, I'm not going to let this happen. But again, I'm a quarterback. That's what I'm used to doing. So, hey, I'm just doing what a man should do, right?
Yeah, Henry, when I took over at Notre Dame, I went from playing to being the head coach 2 days later. No experience whatsoever. So my first parents' meeting the following fall, I get all the parents together in the room, and I said, okay, here's my home number, my cell number, my work number, everything you need, my email address. You call me anytime, day or night, anything at all, as long as it's got nothing to do with hockey. If it's got anything to do with your son, you call me. But if it's got anything to do with hockey, don't call.
I love that.
And I said, don't start with another conversation and try and twist
then segue.
It.
Yeah. You know, that's what, and I'm pretty sure that happened a lot.
They tried, but it's the only way you can do it.
That's true.
And if your son makes it in hockey, there's a good tradition of CFL dads and NHL sons, right?
Oh, man.
Yeah. Darnell Nurse.
Yes, right? Yes.
His father, Richard Nurse. Taylor Hall, his father played in the CFL. That's right. Here's one most people don't know. Phil Kessel. Father played for the Stamps.
He did.
Yeah.
Played for the Stamps. He's a big dude.
Ryan Reeves, of course.
Yeah.
Willard Reeves.
Oh, man. His dad was
I believe Cody Ceci as well.
Kessel's dad was a quarterback.
Cody Ceci's dad as well.
All those guys, their fathers played in the CFL.
Man.
So there's a path that's worn for yourself.
You got some guys to hang out with.
Hey, there we go. I like the sounds of that.
Speaking of paths, there are a number of former CFL players right now trying to make their path to the National Football League. Some of them are doing quite well. Alex Singleton, who the linebacker with the Stampeders, is knocking it out with the Eagles. Sam Aguavin, who played in Saskatchewan last year, is practicing with the starters in Miami. Mark and Michelle had a 75-yard touchdown for the Eagles last week. You tried to make that jump a couple of times, right? Mm. And you did start a game in your career for the Chicago Bears, right?
Yeah, gotcha.
And you were with the Bears for a season?
Just with the season.
Just for one season?
Yeah, just for one season.
Tell us a little bit about what it's like when you're a guy who's played and had some success in Canada, and you go down there on the 90-man roster in the NFL and have to break your way through it.
Well, it almost feels like when you make the jump from college, you know, to whether it's the CFL or the NFL, because there's always that adjustment. And I'm pretty sure in hockey there's the same adjustment when you go from playing in the minors and you kind of work your way up, whether it's to the O or to university hockey right into the pros. There's always that adjustment you got to make of understanding how do you need to fit in. Because when you're in the CFL and you're the guy, you walk around with some swagger, you got that confidence. But however, when you switch leagues, you switch teams, and you're trying to, you know, kind of break that ice to make your way into the fold, you still have that confidence, you still have that swagger, but you got to gain comfort first. You got to know how to fit in. How do I fit into this? How do they perceive me as far as making this team? What's my role within this team? And I think that's, especially for a quarterback, for myself, of being the guy, when I initially went down, I had to back up Brett Favre. And the backup for Brett Favre was either going to be Billy Joe Tolliver or Doug Peterson, who's the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. Well, the thing between those two guys, they were Brett's best friends. And the thing was, I was not going to have a chance to beat those two because
Brett was going to get who he wanted.
Yeah, right? Brett was going to get who he wanted to back. But just as when you hear Aaron Rodgers going off and talking about, I didn't know you were bringing this guy in. Well, that's how Brett had it too. So you knew Aaron was going to want it the same way. So again, we were talking politics. Those are things that you have to understand and you have to play your role. Well, for me, I was a guy bringing Brett Gatorade. I was bringing him McDonald's and his favorite McFlurries and you know, carrying his helmet and his pads, make sure Brett had everything that he needed. And that was my job for a year because, as we knew, Brett Favre never was injured. So for me, I was basically on a vacation for a year watching Brett and friends do their thing on the field every given Sunday. And days 1 through 4, only time I got a chance to participate was really after practice in camp. If there was a day about in a day of two a days, if there were 50 reps, Henry Bruss would get maybe 4. And that was all I, you know, could show. And I had to use those 4 reps. If I had 2 passes, I better had, you know, went 2 for 2. And that's what I did. And that's why I made the team in Green Bay. And I showed some athleticism, of course, at that time. We were in the West Coast offense and they wanted a guy who could throw. They wanted a guy who could run. But then when the coaches came to me and they said, Hank, you're athletic. And I'm thinking, hold up, guys, I only rushed for 120 yards last year in Saskatchewan my final season. I'm not an athletic quarterback. I want to drop back and pass. But I also know that I don't want to get hit by a 300-pound guy. And if my guys don't block them, then I run like heck. That's how I got my 120 yards. But therefore, I also knew that they really didn't know who I was. But the only way I was going to get a chance to prove who I was is to get in the game and get some reps. But that was the unfortunate part, because if I had made a mistake, which occurred in Chicago, they told me the day before we played against Tampa, who ended up winning the Super Bowl that year with arguably one of the best defenses in NFL history, they told me the day before the game, Hank, you're starting.
Your one NFL start, if I got this correct, was on a Monday night. Right?
Sunday night,
and it was in a monsoon.
Monsoon. And we played the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Devon Claybrooks
was on the team. Sheldon Quarles, who was a linebacker for the BC Lions, who played on that team.
Yep.
One of my old teammates from Temple, Al Singleton, was on that team. But you got to look, they had the likes of Derek Brooks at will linebacker. They had Simeon Rice, who led the NFL in sacks. And then, of course, they had Warren Sapp. I mean, you could keep going on and on. Dexter Jackson, who was at
Super
free
Bowl safety. MVP.
Yeah, yeah. They had Lynch, John Lynch, at strong safety. They had which one of the Barber brothers, Rondé Barber.
Rondé, yeah.
I mean, this was a great team, and John Gruden was their head coach. And they told me the day before this game, and guys, I ended up throwing, I think, 3 or 4 interceptions that game. And I remember Brian Urlacher came up and said, "Hey, if you see next season, you're going to do a lot better than you did tonight." But unfortunately, I didn't see next season, and I wasn't able to overcome my mistakes that I made. But, you know, in order to make it, you got to be able to make mistakes and overcome them, because everybody's going to go through it. I don't care how good you are, the Sidney Crosbys to the Peyton Mannings, they all failed early on, but that's what made them successful, is that they were given a chance to overcome and learn from those mistakes.
So here's my question for you. Did you feel that there was a stigma coming from the CFL where they didn't really take you seriously, they wouldn't really give you a chance? And do you feel like that's kind of a race now? Because CFL players every year, they're getting legitimate shots down there, getting reps, getting playing time, and a chance to prove themselves.
Well, two things. Sports is a who-you-know game, as we all know. You know, if I knew so-and-so and knew so-and-so, he's going to give me a chance. The problem is sometimes, along with, if you went to a small university in the States compared to going to the CFL, you're almost deemed the same. Because how many guys do you know that went to your smaller universities in the U.S., your 1AA's, your 2's, and your 3's division-wise, that are breeding success right now or enjoying success? The same is for the CFL. I mean, the thing is, you got to hope for your breaks. You got to hope you know somebody who knows somebody. Just as Jeff Garcia's dad was friends with Bill Walsh, who gave him his opportunity in San Francisco.
Like basically the only team that gave him an opportunity.
The only team that gave him an opportunity. Yeah. You got to know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. But also, you got to hope for breaks. I didn't get any breaks. And there's a number of guys who don't get any breaks. I mean, seeing Al Singleton cause the forced fumble and then seeing people break down his performance just this past weekend, I loved it, because you need that type of backing. You need that type of support from the fan base to help make sure you're getting attention, because the one thing we don't have, like other guys are coming out of college, we don't have the marketing. We don't have that network, and we don't have that wow factor. That's what the Johnny Manziels had. That's what the Kyler Murrays and the Baker Mayfields currently have. That's what you need to be able to succeed on the next level.
Well, and most guys don't get much money, because the way, if you sign as the CFL free agent, unless you'd signed an NFL contract earlier, every dollar they pay you comes off their rookie bonus cap.
Yeah.
So if they commit money to a guy from the CFL, that's less than they can pay free agent rookies at the draft. And they sign the CFL guys in January, and the draft comes in April. But you look at a guy like I mentioned, Sam McGuavin, the linebacker with the Dolphins, right, who played in Saskatchewan the last 3
years. Yeah, he's good.
Well, they got a new coach in Brian Flores, and they've got undrafted guys all over that field because they've opened up, they're turning it over. There was a really interesting quote from Sam McGuavin. I just want to get your thoughts on this, is that he said that the first year he was in Saskatchewan, he was obsessed with the fact that he wasn't in the NFL. He looked at everybody in the NFL and said, "I'm better than that guy, I'm better than that guy, I'm better than that guy." The second year, he decided to really focus on being a great CFL player. The third year, he said, "I had no idea what was going on in the NFL." Like, he completely immersed himself in where he was. And you look at where it's taken him. Do you think a lot of guys who come up here have trouble putting the blinders on that eventually Sam McGuavin found, but in year number one, he couldn't find?
And you see that, because guys are able to develop with experience that tunnel vision. Because at the end of the day, you understand the most important thing, and the one thing you can control is yourself. And I think that's where the focus goes, because you see guys who are like, "Oh, I'm better than this guy. Why am I up here? I should be in the league. I should be doing this." But at the end of the day, you find out that these guys up here are pretty daggum good players as well, because I tell people this. There are millions and millions of football players across this globe, and there are 41 professional teams in North America that those million guys would do anything to get a chance to play. To be on that roster and actually put on those pads and play. And that's one of the things that I always talk to people in Canada about. You don't know how good you guys have got it. Because some of these guys that you're watching to play are some of the best that just never got the opportunity. That's the difference between Nike and Reebok sometimes. Because some people say, "I just like Nike better." Well, that's the case.
I always say that at cutdown day in the NFL, that comes in about 3 weeks, the 32 NFL teams will cut roughly 1,200 players, yeah, like over 2 days. A small percentage of those guys will be offered jobs in Canada.
Yeah.
Every one of them was good enough to sign an NFL contract. A small percentage of those players will be offered a job in Canada.
And just think this. Guys who are in the American Alliance, guys who are going to the XFL, they've been knocking on the CFL's doors forever, and they may never get in. But just imagine this. If Drew Bledsoe didn't get hurt, Tom Brady wouldn't be Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Opportunity.
It is a game of opportunity, as you say. If, maybe, but, whatever.
You do see that a lot, though, where guys come up and the CFL is a means to an end for them. And they focus too much on the end and forget about the means.
Yeah.
And they go out and get smacked around a little and they're like, oh, man. This is a pretty good league.
You're talking about Johnny Manziel? And a few others.
There is a long list of guys that didn't focus enough here.
Henry, big game coming up tonight. The BC Lions at the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. You're on the panel, of course. Watch it tonight on TSN.
I cannot wait because I'm looking forward to seeing Andrew Harris make history tonight, the most accomplished Canadian offensive player ever. He needs 65 yards to accomplish that mark. I mean, I want to ask this question. Is there a Mount Rushmore in Canada? Because I know if there is, he needs to be on that Mount Rushmore when it comes to Canadian football icons. For people who haven't witnessed him playing, you need to watch this guy play because, to me, he's the Michael Jordan of the CFL right now.
Yeah, one of the most consistent players I've ever seen. Thanks so much, Hank.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me
on. All right, Henry Burris from the CFL on TSN.